True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts just to not miss any of our episodes or breaking news stories on this case. Been obviously a very active week thus far with the alleged killer, Brian Koberger, going into police custody in the state of Pennsylvania. Everyone taking a look at this individual, trying to learn anything they can about him from interviews, from accounts of friends, coworkers, whoever really wants to speak, and looking at his eyes. That's something I think a lot of people have been doing in the few clips that we've seen of him going and coming from court appearances, but there's something there. There's something, or maybe that's the thing. There's something not there. Very dead eyes. Very dead eyes, very similar to that of which we've seen in many other individuals historically who have been accused and convicted of such heinous crimes. And as everyone tries to dive into the mind of this individual, I think a lot of people are left going, I don't know. I don't think that way. So I can't quite grasp what is going through one's mind. And that's understandable. Consider yourself kind of lucky if that's how you feel, because I think that's most of us. Most of us don't have that ability to just turn off feeling, to compartmentalize things to such a degree that one would ever be able to pull off such a horrible crime as he allegedly did. But just for one second, put yourself into his mind. This might be an easier one to put yourself there. On that drive back to Pennsylvania from Idaho and those weeks leading up to his arrest, what's likely going through one's mind is probably something like this. And you've allegedly, in your mind, you've pulled off the perfect crime. Nobody seems to be onto you. People are pointing fingers every which way but you. As the days, the weeks, the months go by, no knock at your door, no visits to your work to be interviewed by police, nobody's said anything to you. You've already been labeled as a bit off. You know that. That's been going on your whole life. So no worry to act cool, calm, or collected. Just be you. Keep being who you are. Anything else would look weird, so you can just keep being your weird self. Life as you know it is seemingly moving on like absolutely nothing happened. You're still being cautious. You go to the grocery store. You're putting gloves on just in case. Does that look suspicious? No. Maybe you just are concerned about germs, and COVID wasn't that long ago, right? So some people are still doing this. Most people will write it off as someone who's concerned about COVID, right? You welcome your dad to town, take part on the Christmas road trip back to Pennsylvania that's been planned well before these crimes ever took place. So that's totally normal. The cross-country trek makes its way into the Midwest without any hitches. Thinking, okay, this is going good. Then it happens. You look in your rearview mirror and you see lights. Yeah, the windows rolled up. You still hear the sirens. Is this it? Is this where your freedom ends? Did they finally catch up to you? So do you live to enjoy your freedom another day? Or do you live to fall on the other side of what you've learned in school? To not learn and study the inmates, but to actually be one. You see in your rearview mirror the officer getting out of his vehicle, approaching your car. License and registration, please. When Brian Koberger and his father, both in the car, Brian driving, stopped by an Indiana State Trooper on December 15th. That was a little bit of body cam footage and audio from that moment where the State Trooper pulled over the white Hyundai Elantra with Washington plates, driven by Koberger and his dad at about 10:50 in the morning. The rest of the audio on that is rather difficult to hear, so I'm not going to make you endure that. The look on his face, the look on Brian Koberger's face in the brief second that the body cam is not pointing down at the floor. I don't know what the point of the body cam is when it points down anyhow. Maybe it was just accidentally doing that. But it was, for 1 second, you could see into the car. There was a look there. There was the dead eyes, and there was the look of shock, the look of, I got to act cool, what's going on, I didn't do anything wrong. It's a weird analogy, but my producer made this analogy to me earlier when they saw the photo initially. He said the look on his face was almost like Steve Carell in The Office when he was in his vehicle and he hit Meredith. Just this look of, oh my God, is this it? Did I just do something major? Am I going to be caught for something? It really, if you look at the picture side by side, it's kind of scary. He does kind of have that look on his face. According to Fox News Digital, the traffic stop, which took place 8 days after the Moscow PD had announced they were looking for a white Hyundai Elantra as part of the ongoing investigation, included, you know, some further dialogue. So I'll tell you what was said again, because the audio is hard to hear. The trooper was quoted as saying, when you were driving by me, there you were a little too close to the back of the semi. Koberger appeared to reference being previously stopped by a local sheriff's deputy. I'm not going to give you guys another ticket or warning if you just got stopped. Just make sure you're giving yourself plenty of room, the state trooper said. According to ABC 30, the Hancock County Sheriff's Office confirmed their officer pulled Koberger over at 10:41 a.m., just 9 minutes before the state police did. Also for following another vehicle too close. You think you might learn after the first one? Stay off people's tails? The sheriff's office said he was released on a verbal warning. As to why there was no further action by the state trooper during the stop, Indiana State Police released a statement in part saying, at the time of this stop, there was no information available on a suspect for the crime in Idaho, to include identifying information or any specific information related to the license plate, state, or number of the white Hyundai Elantra, which was being reported in the media to have been seen in or around where the crime occurred, which is very true. All they were saying was, we're looking for a white Hyundai Elantra. There's 22,000 of them in the country. Good luck. And when we look back historically at this, it's likely because they were already tailing him. So why was he not arrested at any of these stops? Well, because they didn't want to have him arrested. And very likely, the local police, the local state troopers and all that, they had no idea he was being tailed by the FBI. I'd almost guess the FBI, who was tailing him at that moment in time, probably had a little bit of a heart attack when he was pulled over twice in a row by two different state agencies for minor traffic violations. They were probably sitting there going, please just let him go. Just keep going. Don't do anything. Because the FBI would not necessarily be releasing information when they're trying to tail somebody and get enough information and evidence built up to make the arrest. They don't want that arrest made too early, tipping off the suspect and then possibly letting him be released if there's not enough to keep him held, creating a very large flight risk. And you don't want to get somebody behind custody or in custody too early behind bars without sufficient evidence. Could also lead to very large prosecutorial problems once the case reaches court. So he is released on both counts, but that is very likely why he was not arrested by local authorities, because again, at that moment in time, he was just one of 22,000 Hyundai Elantras on the road that were white. And there was likely thousands of them also coming out of the state of Idaho. Didn't necessarily mean very much and didn't really look very suspicious either. It was a son and a father driving back for Christmas. And other than Koberger looking like his kind of off self, there really wasn't much reason for any further investigation by those officers. So he's had his hearing in Pennsylvania, and now the trip back to Idaho to take place. As we told you yesterday, the state of Pennsylvania informed Koberger that he must be back in the state of Idaho within 10 days of the extradition hearing per the court order. Law enforcement say the details on transport will not be shared with the public due to security reasons, but with this much attention on the case, and when you're transporting someone cross-country via air travel, there are ways of finding that information out, which has been done as of today. He has been released into, again, police custody outside of the state of Pennsylvania's jurisdiction now. He is going to be boarding a plane, and by the time this is airing, very likely on the plane and heading back to Idaho. And upon arriving in Idaho, the currently sealed probable cause affidavit will be released once he's arraigned in court. He hits the ground, they can't just release it. He has to go in for that hearing. The details surrounding the how, what, when, and where law enforcement were when they realized who their suspect was, likely that information going to be released in the probable cause affidavit. The piece to the puzzle, though, that I think a lot of people are missing that we're not going to get, and I don't want everyone to be super disappointed, you're likely not going to see anything in there about the whys. Why someone would take the lives of four innocent individuals, four young adults at the cusp of starting life's journey as a graduate. That piece, A, we may never find out, or B, if it comes out in court, the motive that they prosecute him on. What's life going to be like for him once he reaches the Latta County Sheriff and goes into jail there? Well, the sheriff there, Richard Skye, spoke to Court TV yesterday and described what the next, God knows how many weeks, months, possibly years, life will be like for Brian Koberger. Take a listen to his description again yesterday from Court TV.
He'll be housed in a separate cell. We'll have some extra security. That's what a lot of the questions are. We want to make sure we do it right. As soon as, which he is probably done in Pennsylvania, so we're waiting for word from them when they'll be what they want to do as far as transport or if we are or whatever like that. So that'll be the timeline. So then we'll know that within the next day or two probably.
Lepper, what's typically happens?
That's a long ways to drive, so yeah. They'll probably fly, I would imagine.
Is it usually Pullman, I guess? That's the nearest airport.
You have Spokane. It just depends on what kind of plane they have and if Pullman's open or Lewiston, because we have Lewiston too.
That's right.
So.
Yeah, that's right. And then whether or not you pick him up there, if they bring him all the way here.
Right.
And he'll be here. This is the jail, right? Like
yes.
Where we are. So
yep, this is the jail.
Tell me more about the jail. Like how many do you house? Is it what typically do you?
I can house up to 37 and I have about 22 down there or whatever. So,
okay. So there's plenty of room for him. And like I said, he'll be in a regular cell by himself.
Yep.
Any special protocol?
No, and he's not guilty, right? Until he goes through court and everything. So he's going to be in my jail, but he's not going to be, treated any different than anybody else in my jail. So. You can talk on the phone to family members and stuff like that. And then we have visitation like most jails do.
Okay, and they can receive mail, they can send mail.
They can have mail and stuff like
they
that.
They get three meals a day, like what?
Oh yeah, yep. He'll get, the same treatment that all the rest of the inmates get. So
be like separated all the time?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
We don't have obviously cases like this on a normal basis. We're not the big city stuff, and so this is definitely different for all of us, and it hit really close to home, and it's pretty horrific, actually.
Yeah, I mean, obviously quite horrific. So that's a little look at what life will be like. One of the last interviews, I think, that took place with any of the official figures with the government or police before a gag order was put into place last night. And I have it right here, the gag order itself. And I'm just going to read through it, what it all means. The big question that was coming out was, does this affect the unsealing of the document in court that we were just talking about? From everything we can understand right now, no, it does not. That will likely be unsealed. What it would affect would be the police or anyone involved with the case in an official capacity, attorneys, police, all of that, speaking about it or making comments or observations on any of it, even if it's, this is in the report. Is that in the report? Can't speak about it, even if you know it is and you're just confirming already documented information. But I'm sure everyone will still continue to be peppered with questions that they can't answer. So you're going to hear a lot of that in the coming weeks. Whatever we hear beyond the unsealing of the document in court in the coming days, that will likely be the last major bit of official information that we're going to get until a trial actually begins to take place and information begins coming out in court. So let's just read through that real quick and then discuss for a second who we will likely be hearing from quite frequently over the next weeks and months, years possibly, as this begins to play out in front of us. This is the top of the document in the District Court of the Second Judicial District of the State of Idaho and in the County of Latta. The court, by stipulation of the parties, enters its orders as followed. It's hereby ordered that the parties to the above-titled action, including investigators, law enforcement personnel, attorneys, and agents of the prosecuting attorney or defense attorney, are prohibited from making extrajudicial statements, written or oral, concerning the case other than a quotation from or reference to, without comment, the public records of the case. This order specifically prohibits any statement which is a reasonable person would expect to be disseminated by means of public communication that relates to the following: 1, evidence regarding the occurrences or transactions involved in this case, the character, credibility, or criminal record of a party, the performance or results of any examinations or tests, or the refusal or failure of a party to submit to such tests or examinations. It goes on to page 2, any opinion as to the merits of the case or the claims or defense of a party, any other matter reasonably likely to interfere with a fair trial of the case, such as, but not limited to, the existence of contents of any confession, admission, or statement given by the defendant, the possibility of a plea of guilt to the charge or offense of a lesser offense, or any opinion as to the defendant's guilt or innocence. It is further ordered that no person covered by this order shall avoid its prescriptions by actions that indirectly but deliberately cause a violation of this order. It's further ordered that this order and all provisions thereof shall remain in full force and effect through these proceedings until such a time that a verdict has been rendered, unless modified by this court. And that's signed by the magistrate judge. Looks like Megan E. Marshall is the signer of that document. So it pretty much spells it out right there. Who's not going to be able to speak? Sometimes in courts, appearances happen after a court appearance with a press conference and speaking this, or my client is innocent, or we believe this person is guilty. All that's not going to happen. There's not going to be little press conferences or rallies outside of the court in any official capacity from attorneys or anyone. What we're likely to hear more from in the coming weeks will be family members, again, friends, anyone who knew the defendant. And I'm guessing we're going to hear both sides of this. As we know from the statement of the Koberger family, they're shocked, they're saddened, their hearts are with the victims, but they're going to stand by their son, because at this moment in time, it appears they believe that he is innocent in their minds. And you have to understand, this is a grieving process. I hate the idea that people are going after and attacking this guy's parents. These parents thus far have done nothing really to show that they're trying to hide anything or cover up anything. I mean, there's been plenty of cases where we look at that and go, oh my God, what is wrong with these people? Take the Petito case, for example. This, I think these people are likely just as shocked as the rest of us. And then imagine being that shocked, wanting to find the killer, and you finding out, oh my God, it's my son, or your brother, or this is the person that's being accused of it. And try to wrap your mind around that in the short order of a few days. Accept it, and then say, oh yes, he must be guilty, when you really haven't seen any signs of this person. You only know this other side to this person that's likely been able to compartmentalize their emotions and act in very specific ways to very specific people as they see fit. Individuals with this type of personality, that's a lot of times how they act. The person they are to one individual or one group of people is very likely not the same person they are to another group of people. It's kind of chameleon-like. If you're to dive into the psychology of it a bit, that's how they kind of survive, because a lot of times they don't feel emotions, they don't have those emotions, and in order to survive, they have to mimic. They're like, okay, this is how it's appropriate to act in this sort of situation or that sort of situation. And they can get by, but it's also the thing that doesn't put up a giant red stop sign or flag and say to them, no, you can't go and kill people right now. That's never an okay thing to do. That sort of thing seems to be missing. As far as what specific disorder Koberger likely has, that's something it's very hard to, and I'm in no way qualified to diagnose just by looking at him. But I will say, and I think as many have, there's obviously something going on there. And there is a similarity just in watching his facial expressions, watching his actions to other convicted killers of the past that have become very notorious. But yes, he is innocent until proven guilty. These are all allegations against him that have not been proven yet, but will be tried in court. I think that's something to remember. And as many have said, have to have patience. In the U.S., our judicial system does not work fast. So as far as when we get a court date and when some of these other pieces of information start coming out, it could be quite a while. That's the latest that we have for you here at the University of Idaho Murders Podcast. Four killed for what? Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts as to not miss any breaking updates and discussions on the case as we have them. Coming up here in the coming days, we're going to be joined by clinical and forensic psychologist and licensed private investigator, Dr. Joni Johnston, to ask her thoughts on this truly unique case and her opinion on what led this man down the alleged path to commit such gruesome acts against innocent victims. And it seems so emotionless. And his appearances in court thus far. So we'll take a deeper dive into the psychology of all this in the coming days. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to Four Killed for What?